The more I try to express my ideas and have more ownership of my work and play to my strengths, the more that thing those things were pushed aside. You know, a lot of it was just plow through, just keep going, and ignore the signs of anxiety and fear and small panic attacks. We have to reverse this idea that to succeed and to get results, you have to lead through the iron fist and you have to lead through fear tactics.
Breakdown Wake Up is about discovering the groundbreaking wisdom within our most challenging life stories. I'm Meg Mateer, a psychology nerd turned business consultant and entrepreneur. Join me to hear from leaders about when things in their lives were breaking down and to listen for the wisdom waking up. Along the way, we'll explore fresh perspectives like how distress is a driver of success, not a barrier to it, how our personal and professional lives are inherently connected, and how our individual experiences can help solve broader societal challenges. In this interview, I speak with Marcel Schwantes. Marcel is an executive coach and an entrepreneur that's out to really steward in a new wave of leadership and management. Marcel shares with us a story about a time in his career where he didn't feel valued. He didn't feel included. He didn't feel like he belonged. And the impact that this experience had on his own self-esteem, had on his own stress levels, on his performance, and on his body. Marcel ended up having health challenges due to the stress that had built up over time. I think one thing to pay attention to as you go into this interview is to think about this relationship between what we sense in ourselves and what's going on in the environment. I think the narrative around performance in general heavily emphasizes this idea of an individual's potential or capacity or ability to perform. And so that's the story that we hear and we tell ourselves a lot, especially in high-performing environments. But this story really sheds light on how important context, environment, connection, how we are treated impacts how we feel about ourselves, which then in turn impacts how we're able to show up to work and how we're able to contribute. I think there's a lot of emphasis in the workplace being put on individuals in terms of their ability to perform. But the problem with that, the problem with only emphasizing ways that individuals can upskill themselves or work harder or more efficiently or more smart, is that it starts to ignore or discredit what's going on in that broader organization. Now, this example that Marcel shows us is just one example of an individual picking up the signals in his own body that not only something is not working for him, but something, there's a broader problem going on within the system. His story is not uncommon. There's plenty of other examples when you're in your place of work and something feels off within your team, within your department, between departments, within the organizations, maybe with clients. You start to sense something. Maybe you can feel it in your body. There's something that's off. It's not necessarily only a signal about something that's going on within you or something that you need to work on. You may be picking up on a deeper systemic challenge. That when organizations and management start to acknowledge the value of these signals within their employees, then there's real potential to start to change those structures, change those cultures, change those interpersonal dynamics that may pose a challenge for not just that individual, but for the whole organization itself. Another thing to frame the story, and I think this is really important as we go into this conversation, is to think about understanding the impact that high performance cultures have on individuals. High performance environments, competitive, fast growing, accelerated, these types of environments can be very enriching for people. They push us outside of our comfort zone, they get us in action. It can be really incredibly fast ways of learning and developing and transforming. But there is a boundary. And when people start to hold themselves as feeling incompetent, if they cannot reach the incredibly challenging demands of some of these high-performance environments, this can create a negative spiral. It can create an organizational energy drain. Because that feeling of lack, that also impacts performance. Finally, a thing to remember, I want to make two distinctions here for you to frame this story as you go into it, because I think Marcel hits on a few important points, but it's important to distinguish these. So one is this idea of being in a high pressure, high performance environment, where maybe the expectations of what you are supposed to do in order to succeed are so high and almost impossibly high. You really have to drive yourself into the ground in order to meet those targets or those achievements. And that can be toxic itself. But the other thing that Marcel mentions in his story is about the toxicity that happens when you feel isolated, unheard, unrespected. When you feel like you're not part of a team, but you're on the outside. And that energy is a different level, is another layer of toxicity. So, Marcel, it's so great to have you on the Breakdown Wake Up podcast.
Love it. I'm so glad I'm here. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. So you are a speaker, executive coach, entrepreneur, and columnist whose work and thought leadership has been featured in publications like Time Magazine, Business Insider, Fast Company, and Forbes. You are also the host of Love in Action podcast, where you have in-depth conversations with top leadership thinkers to discuss how love and care in the workplace actually result in profits and real competitive advantage. Your company, Leadership from the Core, helps organizations transform their leaders and work cultures through servant leadership. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm really curious a little bit to learn about your professional background, sort of how did you start Leadership from the Core? What was the
my age a little bit, but we have to backtrack 25 years ago when I was moving up the ranks in HR. I was, you know, I came from an HR background, organizational development. So So in 2001, I began my HR corporate career and picked up a master's degree along the way and moved up the ranks and then got into executive level HR. And then things got a little ugly. And after all the ugliness, which we can get into, I decided that I needed to start my own company and to kind of pay it forward. And so that leaders wouldn't behave or perform the way that I saw leaders behave and perform which led to a lot of suffering in the workplace, including my own.
I'm really curious to learn a little bit more about your story that you want to share on the Breakdown Wake Up podcast. So, you know, a period in your life when things were breaking down and there was some wisdom that was waking up for you. Where does that story start?
Yeah, it starts back in 2005. I applied to a human resources residency program at a hospital system on the West Coast of the U.S. And this is while I was getting my master's degree, actually had completed my master's degree and applied because I wanted to learn and maybe even be hired at a hospital to help run the HR of a hospital, large hospital. And they liked my background and basically took me up to complete a two-year program where you rotate through all of the areas of a hospital's HR, learn the ropes to, quote, eventually lead your own hospital or at least the HR part of a hospital.
It was like a program for high performers that were going fast-tracked into management.
Executive level HR, director level HR, right? So they had identified me and the plan was to place me at one of the hospitals after I completed this two-year program. So I started to see some warning signs that this was not going to be the case. And I realized that when I figured out that I was in a toxic work environment. And so anyone that's been in a toxic work environment will tell you that the stress level will do wreak all kinds of havoc in your body. You know, cortisol levels go way up. And so I experienced the stress to the point where one day, because I was in this top down command and control environment where fear was a constant prevalent thing every day, right? I had to always look over my shoulder. And so one day I stepped out of the shower in the morning, getting ready to work, and my back went out and I went straight down. And, after about 45 minutes of crawling on my elbows just to get to the phone and call my parents to say, hey, come and get me. I need to go to the hospital. I decided to, of course, report in to my, manager at the time, who was the CEO, and just to let that person know, hey, I'm not coming in. My back just went out. I can't move. Here I am doing commando on my elbows in my apartment, just getting around, right? And because I literally just, my back was out. So as I was on the phone, she, being in a toxic command and control, top-down autocratic environment, the first words out of her mouth were, I don't think that this is a reason for you to not come into work. You're in charge of a project right now. And so she didn't believe me, that she thought that I was being insubordinate. She in fact accused me of insubordination. So while I was on my back on the phone, my boss accuses me of insubordination. So my parents pick me up and take me to the ER. The ER doctor diagnoses it as a stress fracture. And it was a couple of discs that had blown out, right? And on my lower back, L3, L2. And the doctor said, tell me, what's on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the stress level at work for you? And I said, about a 20. And he goes, well, it explains why you're here, because you had a stress response and the cortisol levels in your body just couldn't hold it. I mean, your back couldn't hold anymore because there was so much of that those bad chemicals flowing through your body for so long. This is a period of, 9 months now that I'm constantly looking over my shoulder in this toxic environment, that eventually this is what happened. And so that was the natural course of things that came. And so I was laid out for 2 months. I went on disability. And when I came back, you would think that, people would welcome you back, right? And then the real fun began. Then it was a campaign to try and terminate Marcel. under that same structure, that management structure did not want to see me succeed and complete the program, because at that point they felt that I just wasn't a culture fit, and they were 100% right. I was not a culture fit for a toxic work environment.
It's really interesting to hear that, you know, you had this essentially this medical crisis, which resulted in your own disability, that that your doctor was saying, like, hey, this is pretty much directly related to stress. And I'm really curious to hear a little bit more about, like, if that was like the final straw for your body, like what was going on for you before that final breaking point happened?
Yeah. You say that the usual response to fear is fight, flight, or freeze. And I experienced all of those three on any given day, but that's what fear does. So I was in a state of constant fear. So one day I may freeze up in the sense that I couldn't contribute to the best of my ability or perform at a normal level, because I feared what my superiors were up to. And so for example, I would think, okay, if I maybe make a decision on my own on this particular, task, how will they perceive that? Because, you know, this is a sort of a bureaucratic, autocratic environment. So if I do that, are they going to come down on me? And so the fear would kick in at that point. And so I wouldn't do anything. I would come back from lunches and literally sit in my car and fear walking back into the workplace. And that was just the increasing stress that I wasn't aware of, to the point where finally my body couldn't hold it anymore. And so, you know, a lot of it was just plow through, just keep going and ignore the signs of anxiety and fear and sometimes small panic attacks. I got to keep going. I need to survive. I need to pay the bills.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I'm putting myself in your shoes as well. Like, you're in this accelerator program, right? It's like sort of for high performers. There's a lot of expectation. There's a lot of pressure in general. So there's also a lot of investment on your end to say, like, okay, I'm going to meet the challenge that this is. It's a challenging environment. I'm going to push myself because you're an ambitious person, because you're a leader already. And so there's that tendency to push yourself, even when those stress warning signs are a little bit, you know, showing up. And what's interesting is that the anxiety, the feeling of this cortisol, the shutdown, the fight, flight, freeze, this all going on, these are signals that there's something that's not quite right, right? And I think a lot of times in our organizational space, we focus on the individual. So we say, like, how can you reduce your stress at work? But what I think that's interesting that you're bringing up is that you're also saying that your stress responses, these, your feelings of anxiety, your fear, was your body's indication that there was something that was off in the environment.
And up to a certain point, it really was below the radar. So I couldn't quite detect yet, because I just kept, maybe it's a little bit of pride. I knew that I had to accomplish things. I had a window of a 2-year window where I needed to perform and to complete the program in order to be placed at a hospital as a high level HR person. So yeah, there was that pressure to perform as well. That was so lots of things going on at the same time. But at some point I needed to step back and say, okay, what is this causing? What is this causing in my life? And now you can almost say, fortunately, it did happen where, yeah, my back broke down, and that's when I paused. step back and say, do I want this? And, you know, and just to close out that story, I came back, and even though I was, you know, they were campaigning out to terminate me, I was able to keep my sanity and focus on the work and not on the drama surrounding me, and was able to complete the program, and then I got the heck out of Dodge. So, and you know, some people might have quit earlier. I just needed to prove to myself that I could at least complete the program in a stifling pressure cooker.
Yeah, I think people can relate to being in these accelerators. There's a lot of companies do this, right? Where they take people who are have high potential for leadership, and they put them through a rotational program that is meant to test them. So it's understandable that in that environment, you might be thinking, well, maybe my stress is just that, like, I'm in this high pressured 2-year program. And so I just have to push past my own body's signals. And then your body, being as wise as it is saying, no, you don't push past these signals. These are important to pay attention to. And eventually, you know, your body told you to stop, because it wasn't an environment that that worked.
And there's no question in my mind. And you know, over the years, I read the literature, but had I been in an environment where it was supportive and caring, and you know, management was there walking alongside you and giving you guidance, there is no question that those health issues would not have happened. Again, because the stress is what caused all of the health issues that I had.
There's a difference between sort of the stress that comes with, you know, with doing new things. There's some fear or anxiety with trying on something new, with being in a higher pressured environment. But that's very different from what you're describing, which is this almost relational, I would call it, relational stress, where it sounds even like there's a black sheep dynamic going on, or in your experience that was happening, where you were being seen a bit as a scapegoat. Is that?
Yeah. Everyone experiences good stress. We just can't get away with it, and we need it. It's, you know, good stress. It helps our bodies to cope, but this was a different case of an environment that was kind of out to get you. So yeah. So in answer to your question, it was a point where the perception of how they perceived me was that I was acting in insubordination, and the story of my back going out and me calling in to say I'm not coming in was seen, or quote, perceived as an act of insubordination, right? So they actually didn't believe me that I was out. And and so this is all, it's prevalent in these toxic work cultures, where the expectation is that you do as you're told. And there's a disregard for your humanity, basically, for your needs. And that's very indicative of every workplace where I've seen top-down kind of command and control environments, that kind of culture of leadership. It always leads to a bad outcome. And in my case, a bad outcome was, you know, stress that led to disability.
Can you tell me a little bit more about, like, what was the tension between what you were doing and how you were operating and the feedback you were getting from your team or your superiors?
Yeah. And it's funny you say what feedback I was getting, that was the tension, is that everywhere I went seeking feedback, there was no feedback. And so the stress would increase even more, because they wanted to see how I would perform on my own without guidance and support. So it was kind of that feeling of being dropped out of a helicopter into a fire zone, right? They wanted to see how I would do. And you know, in any work environment, in order for you to succeed, you have to be around people that support you and help develop you and help foster a nurturing environment, right? Because human beings are designed for connection and belonging, and that's what was lacking in that environment.
There was no sense of belonging, and it sounds like there was no clarity on how you were doing. So you never knew, am I doing the right thing? Are the ideas that I have good? Is this landing? You didn't get any of that.
That's correct, because there was no transparency, and so I never knew what the expectations were.
So you were going into work thinking, okay, I have to take on a leadership position, like a rising leadership position, make decisions, take initiative, do all of these things, but you never knew how those decisions that you made, how they were actually being taken or whether they were good or not.
Yeah. And that's because they wanted to, well, they were setting me up for failure because they wanted to see me leave.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You go back also to this whole idea of connection. I think this is something that we discredit, or maybe because it doesn't have a line on the financial statements, or it's a little bit more intangible, this idea of connection and belonging in the workplace is something that isn't necessarily explicitly invested in, but it's really important. And I think that it's an interesting theme also that you draw between your own motivation to continue to perform for this company and your sense of belonging and connection to the team that you were operating in, right? And when that connection felt completely lost or you felt isolated in your role, it not only resulted in a lot of unsafety and stress, but also it resulted in a lack of motivation. You know, why contribute? Because you're not part of a group. You're feeling like people are against you rather than with you.
Yeah. And that's where belonging comes into play. You know, if your workplace is devoid of belonging, then you're basically an island. And coincidentally enough, you know, Gallup has done research on employee engagement, and they say that one of the criteria for a healthy workplace is that you have to have a quote best friend at work. And at the same time as this whirlwind, this hellhole is happening around me, right? There was one person that was sort of a person that just kind of came to my help, and he was there for me to just act as a sounding board in the middle of the mayhem and my madness, right? And his name was Paul. And he was actually the chaplain of the hospital. And so in the middle of this madness, I needed a safe refuge. And Paul became a safe refuge where I could just sit down and talk to him about what was going on and all of the emotions going through my head and the stress, the anxiety, the panic, and all that fear. And Paul was there just to listen. And Paul was that one, I think that one silver lining out of this whole story is that I would attribute the reason why I was able to complete that 2 years to having somebody like Paul, who in the middle of all that, I could say, oh man, I need somebody to talk to, you know? And so I would go see Paul, and he was always available. And he's like, anytime you want to come here and sit down and chat, I'm here to listen. Because he knew what was going on. He had a sort of an objective view. He could see both sides. And so he became kind of my, you know, my advocate.
How did you guys meet? I'm curious.
Well, he was during a 2-year program. He was one of my preceptors. So as I rotated, the chaplaincy was a part of one of the rotations. And so I went through a period where I was under his leadership for 3 months, and then we just stayed in touch afterwards.
To your point, it's important for everyone to have like a best friend or someone they really can trust who works at the company that they're at. But certainly when you're in a period where things are not going well, that you can have someone that can be so open and listen and hear your story
And that's what we need. He was there to connect on a human to human level at a time when I could not connect with anyone. It does something to you emotionally where you feel honored as a human being and dignified while everyone else is disrespecting and disregarding your need for connection. Paul was there to connect with me. So yeah, so in the Gallup sense, he kind of became that, quote, best friend, and that helped me to raise my performance and to finish the program at a high level, because I can now focus on the work and shut the drama around me. And as he lifted up my spirits, then it helped me to perform better.
I can imagine that there was a lot that was going on for you in those 2 years, but then it needed some time to process or for you to go through your own healing in that sense of what had happened to you and how that also caused or was a catalyst for your health issues. So how did you process that after you left the company?
I processed by first understanding that no human being can thrive under the environment I was in. And then as I transitioned out of that hospital, another hospital was interested in hiring me in a very different role. It was a high-level director role where I reported to an executive, and that executive was part of my healing process. And Bruce was the direct opposite leadership approach style than the hospital prior, right? Toxic, top-down, autocratic. But I didn't have labels for what Bruce was or was doing until years after I left. Then I started to have a reference point that Bruce was a servant leader. And under his leadership, I thrived under his caring approach of just kind of pouring into you and being available and spending time with you and guiding you along and mentoring, all that stuff. My performance was at an all-time high. Years later, I started to read the research on servant leadership and how that leads to high-performing cultures. And then it clicked. Aha moment. That was Bruce. And that led to me now doing what I do.
What a relief to have such a starkly different relationship with your leader, your manager. In this next opportunity, and that you could see also, it sounds like you sensed the real difference in you that it made. So can you describe to me like how you felt when you were at work, when you were under Bruce's guidance?
Absolutely. And in fact, it took a little bit to believe that this was the case. Like, wait, is this for real? I mean, is this guy for real? He would just invite me to these talk sessions where he would just mentor me for an hour. And I'm looking at my watch going, doesn't he have something to do? He's an executive. I mean, come on. Well, his whole idea was to make sure that I'm being set up and equipped to succeed. And so what do you think that did to my psyche, to my confidence level, to my ability to perform? So I felt at an all-time high, like I was validated as not only as a human being, but as a worker, as an employee, that this person has his best interest in mind. It turned out that I loved the job, but the reason I loved the job, even the parts that, you know, I could have done without, everybody, every job description, you got a couple of things that you could do without, right? But even those things, I could say, you know, I can actually do this. And the reason was because I had an awesome boss. My self-esteem shot up. Obviously, I didn't have any health issues. My body felt great again. I probably during Bruce, under Bruce's leadership, I never had a back issue again. And Bruce helped me to have a voice. And so he was able to not only listen, but solicit my opinions on decisions. And Bruce wanted the opinions of his team. And Bruce always asked for feedback on how he was doing. And so it made me feel part of the team. Like it made me feel safe. It was psychologically safe.
Yeah. So now you're in this environment where your ideas and your feedback to Bruce matter. You feel like you belong, that somebody really cares about you, that you're working for. So you have all sorts of energy and stuff. It, you know what? It's making me think of also this idea of motivation that for whatever reason, I think somewhere in our culture, we passed down this idea that in order to motivate people, that we needed to sort of be critical of their current behaviors in order to motivate them to work harder or do something differently. And we know from research that this doesn't work. This doesn't act as a motivator, that some sort of criticism or putting people down for what they're currently doing usually results in some sort of reaction. Like you were describing, this fight, flight, freeze, right? Protect yourself from the swords and the arrows that are being slinged at you. And I think it's a really important, I bring this up because I think your experience is a really extreme, like a more extreme version of this. But I think this is happening a lot in organizations where there's still this assumption that if we want people to improve or if we want them to work hard, there has to be some sort of level of critique or I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
There's a focus on short-term results. And so in order to get short-term results, you have to, you still have to motivate people through the carrot and stick way of doing things and then hold them accountable to some incredibly high expectations that might be unrealistic for them. We have this still in this day, here we are, 2020, and we are still operating by the relics of the industrial age 100 years before us, where, you know, disregarding that people need much more than given a job and being told what to do and paying them, right? We now understand human behavior and human performance, that workers need much more than that. They need to feel like they belong, and they need to feel safe and in an environment where their creative expressions are heard, in a leadership structure that shares leadership and is authentic and real and gets feedback from those below them and builds community so that everyone is fully engaged from the neck up.
Yeah, it's a great point, because I think to sort of put the bookend on this topic with motivation is that, like, when people feel supported and they feel included and they feel like their voice and their decisions and their efforts matter, then that intrinsic motivation kicks in. So you had mentioned this whole idea of carrot or stick, right? Reward and punishment, that people are only working for some sort of external reward or to avoid an external punishment. But what you're talking about really is tapping into this intrinsic motivation. So our natural willingness as human beings to want to contribute to something or want to express our ideas or to be a part of something bigger than us. So it's really, it's really inspiring to see this transition for you and how it's impacted what you do in your own organization. So you had this experience with Bruce as your new leader and were inspired. And then what led you from that experience of working under a servant leader into your entrepreneurial ventures now?
Yeah, I felt called to transfer knowledge from not only from my own leadership skills and experiences, but I'll tie that into the research of what creates great company cultures and great leaders, and point it back to servant leadership and use that model to teach other leaders to do the same so that we end the suffering that we have experienced in the workplace for, 100 years or more. We have to reverse this idea that to succeed and to get results, you have to lead through the iron fist and you have to lead through fear tactics. And so my whole practice is basically to reverse that belief system. It's a wrong belief system.
Yeah, that's great. It's really important. I think also this idea that human beings are different than machines. It's weird, but I feel like we adopted that assumption in the industrial age that we have a certain amount of output and we need to maximize that output of human beings. And also this assumption that people, when not motivated by external things, are just going to get lazy and just do whatever they want and not be engaged in work, which is also a misassumption, right? That's another, I think, myth from the industrial era. The work that you're doing now within companies to transform leadership and to debunk these assumptions, right? It's essentially a bad story that's gotten spread around that everyone's bought into, and we didn't even know that it was a bad story. So it's great that you're changing that narrative in the work that you're doing individually with leaders, but also in groups and in changing organizational cultures, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to stress for business leaders and people in high places to understand. We have to stress that all those things that we were talking about, creating cultures of belonging and connection, actually lead to better performance. Those companies led by those kinds of servant leaders outperform the competition over and over again. So there is the business case for why you should do the same. It's not a soft, fuzzy, touchy-feely type of thing here. We're talking about, human performance. And when you have those parameters in place in a healthy culture of clear expectations, where people feel safe to contribute and contribute with their God-given brain. That's why you hire them. So let them use their brains and creativity without squashing them. When you have those things in place, it leads to business outcomes and profit. That's why my podcast, I always start with, it's love in action. There's nothing more fuzzy than the word love in a podcast. But the whole thing that I'm stressing is that when you create love-based environments, it does lead to profit.
Do you have an example of a client that you worked with that that you made this transformation, that you saw sort of the before and after?
Many examples, including not too long ago, in a hospital environment, in the same not the same place, but yes, it's funny how this story comes full circle, right? A colleague of mine did a full training and consulting to a hospital system. As new expectations started to emerge about how to lead, they saw direct correlation to how their line managers were performing. Well, hello, that's the whole point. So the line managers were more engaged, which meant that their staff and employees and healthcare professionals were doing better work. And if you're in the hospital system, from a business standpoint, if you have high employee satisfaction and the employee experience is high, in a hospital, that correlates to better patient satisfaction in your surveys every time.
Makes sense, because it's a human-to-human service. So relationships are really important, especially in these service industries. Well, thank you so much, Marcel, for this sharing this story. It's been a really rich conversation.
I'm glad, and thank you for inviting me.
This interview is cram-packed with interesting, relevant themes to what's going on in our workplace today. I'm so grateful that Marcel had the courage and the willingness to open up about his own story, because again, it's not uncommon. So by him sharing what happened to him in this environment and how it impacted his motivation and his health, he starts to plant a seed for conversation. I think one of the really important themes that comes up for me is this idea of personal responsibility versus environmental sensitivity. And I don't really have so many answers here when it comes to this theme. I just think it's something that we need to constantly balance. It's important to take personal responsibility for our own position in life. Taking responsibility allows us to have more freedom to transform our circumstances. If we feel completely unresponsible, it can create this sense of passivity. But at the same time, we have to balance that sense of responsibility with the acknowledgement of the reality that we are living our day-to-day lives embedded in an environment that has an influence on us. And our relational connections have a significant impact on our own sense of self, on our own abilities, and on the story that we tell ourselves. So our environment is really important. And sometimes when we're in distress, those signals are not just picking up on something that has to do with us individually. It has to do with our environment. It has to do with our relationships. I think the other theme that I really want to unpack here is about how toxic culture is actually passed down. So Marcel talks about toxic culture throughout his story, being in a toxic work environment versus being in an empowered, supportive work environment, and how he links that to the importance of understanding what it means to be a leader. And I'd like to add an additional perspective to understanding just how organizations develop toxic cultures, because I think it's too easy to move simply towards a sort of good versus evil narrative. You know, maybe you felt yourself at some point that you have a boss or a colleague or a client that's just pure mean evil, right? Like it's sort of vilifying that person that's embodying the energy of toxicity. But that's why I want to make a point here to talk about how toxicity can be passed down and how toxic culture spreads. So, and I'd like to share an example of a company I was consulting for, and I was doing a bunch of interviews with the employees on this particular team. And I remember that every employee I talked to mentioned something about how in the beginning of their time at the company, they had lots of ideas. They really wanted to contribute. They were really creative in thinking about new ways of having this team make an impact on the company. And after they told me those stories and their eyes lit up, then the energy sort of subsided. And they told me that they learned that when they brought up their ideas, that they were met with a lot of resistance. And so they gave up. They felt discouraged in some sense. And what was so interesting was that when I spoke to their managers had a similar narrative. Their managers were the ones that were telling them that they couldn't do these new things. But the managers had also had a similar experience with either their managers or with clients, internal or external. So they had also been discouraged. They had also had that experience of having so much energy and wanting to contribute and then having that being shut down for them. And so I do think that there's this dynamic going on where you experience your own ideas getting rejected. This becomes your expectation of what is needed or what is required in order to survive or thrive at the company. And so that's how this sort of these assumptions can get passed down literally through generations of an organization. And also the resentment that resided within these managers about their own ideas getting shut down then manifested into this rule for the people that were working on their own teams. Like almost as if to say, if I wasn't allowed to do that at your stage, then you can't either. And I make this an explicit point because this has less to do with being an inherently good or an inherently bad leader or manager. This has much, much more to do with learning. And when all of these dynamics are happening, many of them are happening at an unconscious or subconscious level. All of this is going on, everything that we're talking about, but no one is fully understanding or acknowledging what's going on within their teams. So the beauty of doing organizational consulting and psychology work is that these dynamics that exist under the surface, sometimes for 10, 20, 30 years, these outdated assumptions or these pain points that then get carried out through the day-to-day behaviors of all of the employees, these can come to the surface. They can be moved from the subconscious into the conscious aspect of the organization. And that starts with individuals starting to pay attention to their own distress system. And it also starts with the organization acknowledging that there's something always within organizational culture that's underneath the surface. And that by bringing it up in a conscious and safe way, that's really where the transformation can happen. When organizations and individuals dare to go deep underneath their day-to-day behaviors, thoughts, and beliefs, they can then translate those insights into their actions, into their structures, into what is needed to change the operations of an organization. I think the final theme to mention that is really interesting here is about how we understand productivity and what it means to be productive in general. I think Marcel brings up a really good point. You know, when he shifted from working in this more toxic, autocratic environment to working under a boss that was this servant leader, that he said that this boss was investing all of this time in mentoring him. And Marcel's first thought was, well, doesn't Bruce have so much that he needs to do at this executive level? That in some way, him investing in developing Marcel didn't seem like a productive use of time, even though he himself acknowledged the value that that meeting and mentorship had on him. I think it just goes to show how this behavior of this leader not only supported Marcel in developing his performance, but it also shifted his assumptions about what it meant to be really productive as a leader, and that taking the time to invest time and energy in developing relations and connections within a team goes far beyond an annual retreat or a holiday party or Friday evening drinks. It's something that needs to be embedded in the day-to-day operations and needs to be understood and counted as productive time. Productivity is not just about getting the things that you need to get done on the list of things to do. That productivity is also about investing in the relationships that then return at an exponential rate of productivity on the back end. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. If you like this podcast and you want to help share it with other people, the best way that you can do that is to leave a review on iTunes or on your podcast provider. It really helps spread the word and the support for this project. Thanks again, and I'll see you guys next week. If you like what you just heard, please check out our website at www.breakdownwakeup.com. If you subscribe to our mailing list, you'll get weekly updates about episodes and special events. We also have a growing community of people who are getting excited about this concept and sharing their own thoughts and reactions. Finally, if you're trying to discover the underlying wisdom within your own breakdown and need some help, we've designed special programs to help do just that. Thanks again for listening, and remember, when things are breaking down, important wisdom is waking up.